Good stuff. We're going through the book of Hebrews, and I wanted to kind of catch a little something before we just jumped right into some of our text today, and I'm going to try and keep as much together as I can. This is a huge, huge passage and a lot of really cool stuff, and so I really wrestled with how to bring it, and so if we have, is this glaring on anybody? I think first service we dropped the lights a little bit so it wasn't glaring. Is anyone getting a glare from the whiteboard? Okay, and I switched colors so that hopefully you guys can see it. Okay, so in chapter 7, I'll skip ahead real quick. We'll come back, so don't panic if you know where we're supposed to be at. We got a guy named Melchizedek, and I'm just going to call him Mel because it's easier. So we've got Melchizedek, and the Hebrews author gets into a little argument that he builds out of this idea of the Melchizedek, this priest that came out of nowhere. His story, and I didn't double check this between services, but I believe it's Genesis chapter 14. He's mentioned again in Psalm 110. So the story, he just shows up out of nowhere, a very mysterious character. Melchizedek comes to Abraham after Abraham has gone into battle to rescue his nephew Lot, rescued him, and this is before the whole Sodom and Gomorrah. He was living in Sodom and then got taken over, and then Abraham rescued him, and then he went back, the dummy. So Abraham had rescued him, and then Melchizedek visits Abraham, and Abraham gets a blessing from Melchizedek. Now, the blessing typically comes from someone who's less than or greater than? Greater than. So the blessing comes from Melchizedek, and he's greater than, we'll do Abe. So I'm not writing all. So Melchizedek's greater than Abe, than Abraham. And then Abraham gives a tenth of what he has. In fact, if I remember right, also, that is the first place the tithe shows up in Scripture, is right there in that story of Abraham and Melchizedek. And so he gives him a tenth, which shows that Abraham agrees that Melchizedek is greater than he is. So Melchizedek believes he's greater because he gives a blessing to Abraham. Abraham believes he's greater because he gives a tenth. And so all this happens here in chapter 7 of Hebrews. Give you guys kind of a reference of where that is. So then the Hebrews writer kind of gets into some argument here that Abraham was Father Abraham, right, of all of Israel? And so since Father Abraham was all of over all of Israel, then Abraham was over the Levites. Levi, which was one of the 12 tribes of Israel, because the promise for Israel, the promise for God's nation, God's people, came to Abraham, and then it was Abraham's descendants that then became Levi, or one of the tribes was Levi. And Levi, does anybody remember why Levi and the Levites were a big deal? What did they become? Well, yeah, they were the priests. So, since Abe was the father of them, then he would be what? Greater than Levi, which if he was greater than Levi, that means he was greater than all the priests, including the high priest. We'll do HP for that just to keep things simple, okay? Now, all this is in chapter 7, and that way when we get there, we can just keep on rocking and rolling, okay? Keep on moving forward. So that's 7 and 9. We're not going to even touch 9. That's bridges into next week. So this idea of a high priest, I did not leave enough room up here. That the Hebrews writer then brings up Jesus. And that's too small of a greater than symbol, but that's all the room I left myself. That Jesus was greater than Melchizedek. And if Jesus was greater than Melchizedek, then who else is Jesus greater than? Everybody. He's better than Abraham, which was Father Abraham. A couple weeks ago, we talked about how Jesus was better than Moses, and that was a huge claim. And Moses wrote the first 5 books of the Bible, and Moses was just an amazing man. The miracles that went through Moses. No one was more humble than Moses. Moses got to see God's glory, or the tail end of it. Moses was just amazing. And now he's coming in, and he's going to Father Abraham, who the promise came to. And he says, Jesus is greater than him. He's greater than even the person that was greater than him was. So if Jesus is greater than Melchizedek, he's greater than Abraham, he's greater than all the Levites. And so his point there is that instead of just being a high priest, Jesus is a GHP. He's a greater high priest. He is the great high priest. And that's the argument that he gets into there in chapter 7. But let's back up, because this idea of a high priest, of Jesus being our high priest, started way back in chapter 2, verse 17. We can have that on the board real quick. 2:17 right here. And it shows up in 2:17 saying, for this reason he had to be made like them, fully human. You guys remember this. In every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful what? High priest. In service to God. And that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. And that's where we're headed. Here, I'll asterisk that. So, all right, so 2:17, then he shows up again, or the Hebrews writer talks about it again in 3:1 in one of the exhortations that we looked at. Therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus. Fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle, new covenant, and our what? High priest, old covenant. He was faithful to the one who appointed him, just as Moses was faithful in all of God's house. So, and then he starts talking about this at the end of 4, so 4b to 5a, and this is the section we skipped last week. I thought it'd be nice to have a little visual because we jumped around a little bit between last week and this week. So that was the section we skipped because what we did was we got into this section here, chapter 6, the little interlude there between these two. So he gets into Jesus as the great high priest here. And we're going to go back and look at that today. Then he gets into this interlude of saying, church, you got to grow up. You got to move on past the elementary truths of God. I got some really, actually it's not I, it's a we, which is kind of interesting. I haven't done much talking about the author of Hebrews. It's a mysterious thing, who he is or who she is or who they might be. One of the things you see in the book of Hebrews is you see some of the we passages. You have some I passages, which means it was written by, that's written from one person, I. But then there are we passages, and I didn't bring that up last week. And last week, we talked about how at the beginning of last week's section, we have such great things to share. We have more to share with you, but we can't because you don't even try to understand anymore. You don't even try. And so that's kind of a neat little, fun little trivia thing that there's a we there. So it alludes to at least some of this letter was written from a group or a group of people and not just a singular author. So that's a little we statement there. So that is here. We can't go on with this really awesome stuff that we want to talk about because you're not keeping up. You're still on the elementary truths and we got some really awesome big truths to teach you. So that was kind of the pressure too for this morning was, man, there's some awesome big stuff here and I want you to leave with it. I want you to take it from Hebrews and go, wow, this is life changing. This is awesome. This is going to be great for me in my life. And so let's rewind then to chapter 4 and go back to that. Chapter 4, verse 14, the beginning of this journey of Jesus as a high priest, a great high priest. Therefore, since we have a what? Yeah. It's the GHP, not the HP. So therefore, since we have a... I got one person. All right, everybody. So great high priest. I want you to leave that with that. Or I want you to leave here with that. Great high priest who has ascended into heaven. Jesus, the Son of God. He's alluded to that earlier in the letter, but this is, he comes right out and says it. Gloves are off right before we get to the place where you know the gloves came off in chapter 6. And he says, the Son of God. He is the great high priest. Let us hold firmly to this faith we profess. And so this big deal of holding strong, holding on, don't give up, don't let go, don't drift away, don't fade away. Hold firmly to this faith that you have in this great high priest, the Son of God. For we do not have a high priest, and here he is starting to unpack this idea a little bit. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one that has been tempted in every way, just as we are. Yet he did not sin. Jesus is a better high priest because he meets specific needs that other high priests or other religious leaders or other spiritual leaders can't meet the way Jesus meets them. He's the great high priest because he meets things that none of these people can. None of the people here today can. And one of those needs that he meets is that he can empathize with our weaknesses. Let's write this down. Jesus meets our need for help. Actually, I skipped ahead a little bit. Let's go to this note then. Jesus meets our need for help by being our perfect helper. So we're going to write that down. He meets our need for help by being our perfect helper, and I don't have a lot of time to jump into the word perfect, but the word perfect is a big deal in this section, and it's a big deal in the book of Hebrews. Kind of like the word better that we talked about, the word perfect shows up a little less, but it's still a very prominent word in the book of Hebrews about Jesus being perfect, about us being made perfect, and then the desire that's there, and we'll hit a little bit on that today. So he meets our need for help because he's a better helper, a perfect helper. The role of any spiritual leader is to bring people closer to God, to lead them closer to God, to help in that process. Whether that's a priest or a high priest or a paid staff or an elder or a volunteer that's a leader in the church, or husbands here. You've been charged in the Bible as being the spiritual leader of your household. So your job is to help lead your family closer to God, to help them, to be a helper in that role. But Jesus trumps, he trumps all of those people. Am I right to say that? Is that a distraction now? Can you use the word trump in church now without it being a distraction? Can we go back to euchre? Okay. Because some people want to cheer, other people want to boo, and I just don't want to stir up that kind of emotion here. But the idea is Jesus is better. He is better. And to use that word in that format with a lowercase t, he trumps every one of the spiritual leaders before him and after him. He is the great high priest. He's a better helper because, and here's where I was going a minute ago, he empathizes. He empathizes with our weaknesses because he was tempted in every way. He was tempted in every way. He empathizes with our weaknesses. Let me kind of unpack this just a little bit. He doesn't empathize with our rebellious attitude. When Jesus was here, in one of the verses we read earlier, fix our thoughts on Jesus, I think, he was made fully human. That was 2:17. He was made fully human. He shared in our humanity. He did that so he could understand what it was like to have a weak heart. What Jesus did not experience, he did not experience an attitude of rebellion against God. And so that's where things are a little bit different. You think, well, God, you know, Jesus understands this rebellious heart. No, he doesn't understand that. He understands a weak heart. He understands a heart that's struggling, that's putting forth some effort and having a difficult time. Jesus was not a hard heart. He understood what a weak heart was like. And there's a big difference in those two. And we need to make sure we understand that there's a big difference between those two. From one of the commentaries I use, I'll quote the commentary. It had a neat little section on this. That weakness grieves God. Hardness angers him. He will help the weak. He will expel the disobedient. To one, he offers mercy and grace. To the other, he promises harsh judgment. And that's why the writer of Hebrews explains the severity of what it's like to get a hard heart, of what it's like to drift so far away that you have no contact with God anymore. You've drifted so far away from the faith that there's no connectivity happening there. In fact, he shares in it in the section prior to this that we talked about 2 weeks ago. Don't let your hearts get hard like they did in the desert and da 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 da. If you guys remember that, if you don't, go back and read it or listen to the sermon both. But then he also does it after this section in chapter 6, what we talked about last week in that harsh reprimand of make sure you're growing, church, because if you don't, you're going to drift away, and you can drift away to the point where you just completely reject God and reject his promise. And that's a threat to all of us. We can't look at that and say, well, that can't happen to me. No, it can. And it will if we aren't focused. So his concentration there on the severity of a hardened heart or a heart that's drifted so far away is in contrast then or already dealt with, as opposed to this understanding that Jesus helps those with a weak heart. He can help those in our weakness. Our rebellious attitude is corrected by fear of God and by humility and by submitting and repenting to God. Our weak heart is strengthened. Our weaknesses are encouraged by Jesus because he understands our weaknesses. He empathizes with that. A weak faith he will strengthen. A weak faith he will encourage. But the lack of faith, that's on us. So we got to keep on moving. Jesus, we have to keep ourselves moving, keep ourselves motivated. So Jesus is a better helper for another reason. He's a better helper because his victories give us hope for victories in our struggle with sin. When Jesus is victorious in his struggle with sin, then we have hope because we can look to him and say, you know what? He was victorious. I can be victorious. And I know I'm not going to be perfect. I know you're not going to be perfect. I know that I'm going to succumb to sin. I'm going to fall to that numerous times in my life. I'm going to make some stupid decisions that I know I shouldn't have made before I made them, and I definitely know I shouldn't have made them after I made them. I know that that's going to happen for me, and I know that I'm not going to be able to follow Jesus perfectly. However, with that knowledge, we can't just write it all off and say, well, you know what, I'm going to fail anyway, then, you know, why even try? Then it goes back to that same word from last week. You can't stop trying. You got to look at Jesus' example and be encouraged, church, by his victories. We're told he was tempted in every way. I think sometimes we don't believe how much temptation he struggled through and dealt with as Jesus. We say, well, there's no way that Jesus was tempted by the comfort of sexual morality. There's no way that Jesus was tempted by the feeling of the escape of recreational drugs or substance abuse. There's no way that Jesus was tempted with a desire to amass a huge bank account to make himself, to give some sort of self-worth. You know what? In my experience in video gaming, you don't make it to level 10 without going through levels 1 through 9. And really, that's the same in everywhere, you know, not just video games. But, you know, when we look at Jesus, we know Jesus suffered the temptation of sin at level 10. And even though the Bible doesn't speak on each specific sin that Jesus was tempted with, we know from any progression of logical sense that if you're going to make it to level 10, you have to survive through levels 1 through 9 first. And the Bible says he was tempted in every way. Everyone say every way. Every way. So he can empathize with our weakness. He can empathize with us. And he can say, you know what? I was tempted in every way, and here I was victorious. And we can look to that and we can say, you know what? Jesus did this. And if I follow in his footsteps, if I follow his example, if I obey him, then I can be victorious too. And we need that. We've needed Jesus in so many reasons and so many ways. And I really hope that I'm bringing some of these back up to the surface for you from the text of Hebrews, that we have a Savior that says, you know what? I was victorious and you can be too. And I want you to leave today with that attitude and that feeling in your heart of saying, you know what? Doggone it, I want to give it a good try. I want to go out there and I want to do my best. I'm going to be victorious because I'm going to follow in Jesus' footsteps. And he was the example that I'm going to follow. Sometimes we need to see someone do something first. I'm very cautious to bring a whole lot of Taekwondo references, but there's one that fits here. When I was struggling with, I had an inch and a half concrete block or cinder block, and it scared the mess out of me to try and break that thing. And I had just a mental block, and I just couldn't get to it. And Master Beckman, my teacher, I've seen him break 7, up to 8, I think, last year he's gotten up to. But the one that was the most important was just outside of class one night, just the two of us, and he puts it up on the stanchions there, and he breaks 1. And he says, I want to show you it can be done. And that gave me the confidence to know if I do things like he did it, then I can do it. And that one meant more to me than the 10 or 8 or whatever he does now, because it gave me confidence. That same, let me transfer that for you. That same confidence can come to us from Jesus. When he says, look, here's how you defeat sin. Here's how you are victorious. Watch me do this. Pray to God, use scripture, defend, hold tight to God. And we're going to talk about this a little bit here. I'm mixing all my notes up here. But here's how you do it. Watch me. Now you do the same thing. So church, go out there and be victorious because you're simply following Jesus. And this idea of confidence, he gives us confidence to be victorious. He also gives us confidence to go before God and to pray. Verse 16 of chapter 4, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Because what Jesus has shown us about God's mercy and grace, we can feel confident that we can go before God's throne. Let's write this down. Jesus is a better helper because we can approach God with confidence because of his grace. He meets that need for us. We have mercy and grace to help us in our time of need. I don't think we lean on God the way we should. I think sometimes we lean on God when things get rough, when things get tough, when we've done all we can, and then we lean on him. Church, we need to be in constant communication with God, constantly talking with him. We need to be in constant communion with God. Here in a moment, we're going to meet around the Lord's table, and we're going to have communion together. We're going to share in the bread and the little cup, and that's going to be a remembrance meal of the sacrifice of Jesus. And we call that communion because we are communing with God. We're communing with each other. Church, that should not just happen for 5 minutes on a Sunday. We should be in communion with God all the time. We should be leaning on God all the time. Our connectivity with God should be constant. Not little spurts here and there. It shouldn't be a case where we're asking Jesus to take the wheel. He should have had the wheel the whole time. But those times when things get rough and things get scary, then we lean on God. We need to lean on God all the time. That's what Jesus the high priest came to open the door for us, so that we could have confidence to go to the throne of God in our time of weakness. Confidence in the times when we have the least amount of confidence. I know the times that I want to go to God least are the times when I'm struggling with sin. The times when I feel dirty. The times when I feel lowly and unworthy. The times when I feel naked like Adam and Eve in the garden, and you hide from God. And I know I'm not alone there. And the Hebrews writer says, Jesus came, he's a great high priest because he allows us to have confidence to come before God's throne of grace. Throne of grace. In our time of need. Not just in the time when you're the most holy. Not just the time when you've made awesome decisions and you're sitting on cloud nine. You're a mountaintop experience. But the times when you're struggling, he wants you to come to him and receive strength for a weak heart, so it doesn't turn into a hard heart. To receive encouragement for a weak heart, so that you don't drift away and become a detached heart. Confidence. Why would we neglect such a great thing as prayer? As being able to talk with God and share with God. Why would we neglect that? God has given us, he's taken care of every excuse we would ever have to connect with him. I mean, he's holy. I'm sinful. His answer? Mercy. He's perfect. I'm flawed. His answer? Grace. He's strong. He's perfect in his strength. I'm weak. I'm weak-hearted sometimes. I want to do good, but my weak heart sometimes lets me down. His answer? The great high priest. His answer? Jesus. Here, I'm going to come to earth and I'm going to walk among you, and I'm going to share in your weak heart, so that I can understand, so that I can empathize, so that I can say, I get it. Because without the incarnation of God in Jesus Christ, he wouldn't have been able to understand that weakness. But Jesus is a great high priest because he can understand that weakness. He can show us victory after victory of what happens when we obey God. He can give us confidence to go to God, the source that he turned to constantly while he was here on earth. Jesus constantly was going to God in prayer. And not just for moral issues. You know, we don't know what kind of moral issues that he struggled with that we don't have listed, that he kept inside. But he went to God often and got alone with God and prayed to God. But not just in moral issues, but also mortal issues. Not just morality, but mortality. We know that Jesus was praying in the garden. Let's go on and go to... Well, I hope I got all that. That's a lot of skipping. Hebrews 5:7 says, during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions. And yes, he's talking right there about a general amount, but we're going to see that he gets very specific in one of his references here. But Jesus offered up prayers and petitions. We know that he did that. That was a pattern of his. That was a life pattern, a habit of his. With fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And that's the illusion that makes us understand and believe that the Hebrews writer is starting to focus down a little bit into the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was praying and he was stressing to the point that drops of blood were coming off of his forehead instead of sweat. And he was praying, God, if it would be any way, let this cup pass before me. But not my will, your will be done. But his prayer was, save me from this. Save me from this death. Save me from this. With cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. It says he was heard. For me, when I read that, I get a big question mark that just pops up over my head. He was heard? Really? Because in my Bible, he went to the cross. Did the Hebrews writer not see that? Jesus went and he prayed to the one that could save him from death. And it says he was heard, but he still went to the cross. Church, let me assure you, God rescued Jesus. God saved Jesus. And it wasn't from the cross, it was from the grave. Amen? So you know what? When we're worried, when we're going through times, I know we do this, when we're praying to God and praying to God and praying to God, and we just don't feel like he's coming through for us, maybe he's got a bigger rescue in mind. Have you thought about that? Maybe when you're going through something, he says, you know what? I'm not going to rescue you from the cross, but I'm going to rescue you from the grave. I'm not going to rescue you from the situation that you're going through. I'm going to rescue you from something bigger that's coming later, and it's going to have more impact. Because isn't it greater that God rescued Jesus from the grave than he rescued him from the cross? Didn't that bring more glory to God? Didn't that expose God's power? What did that do for us? What would have happened if God would have rescued him from the cross? Instead of rescuing him from the grave, how much good came from him rescuing him from the grave? And then if we translate that into our life, maybe the thing you're going through and you're praying about right now and you're saying, you know what, God, why aren't you listening to me? Why don't you hear me? You're not acting, you're not doing anything. Well, let me plant a seed in your mind. Maybe you're praying about your cross and God's got in mind an empty grave. And that empty grave is going to bless more people in your life than saving you from whatever that cross is in your life. What if that's what's going to happen? He's greater. He's greater, greater, greater. Verse 8 of chapter 5, and I kind of have to hit on this a little bit. My conscience wouldn't let me let this verse go because it's a little confusing to read. Son though he was, sounds like Yoda. Son though he was, that's actually, it's really nice because the NIV tried to grab the Greek order of that. Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. And a lot of people read that and they say, what? He learned obedience? Because that sounds like you learned something you didn't know. And that's not the case here. Let me learn you a little something on that verse that I've learned about from that verse. It wasn't something where Jesus came from not knowing obedience, which that would be disobedience or plain old ignorance, that he suffered and then all of a sudden, aha, now I know what obedience is. No, Jesus learned the value of obedience from obedience. And suffering was the middle part there. Jesus was obedient. In fact, we're told in Philippians that his obedience is what led him to the cross. Obedience led him to the suffering that he went through. But that suffering led him to a better, deeper understanding of the obedience that he had. See, we always think that you have to, in order to learn something, you have to not know something. Jesus showed that he learned what he showed that he knew what he already knew by suffering, and then showing what the value of that suffering, of that obedience through the suffering, even the worst kind of suffering. So Jesus was obedient. He went to take a test on obedience and he got an A+ because he knew obedience before the test ever came. And so it wasn't that the suffering taught him obedience, but it taught him the value of obedience, and it teaches us the value of obedience. And we can, you know, we have a lot of people, and I know I had a good friend of mine that was a Christian all his life. He grew up in church, and he said, you know what? I just don't have that big conversion experience where I went from something really dark and really, you know, and he shared this with me because I kind of come from this background. And he's like, yeah, I don't have your story where you came to meet Jesus and he washed away all your sin and you were just making really bad decisions and you met Jesus and you started making really good decisions and following him and you came from an unholy life to a holy life. My friend had grown up in church and he really lived a good life. He didn't get into a whole lot of stuff. And he said, you know what? My testimony, for a long time, he felt like his testimony didn't mean a whole lot because it wasn't the dark to light movement. But really, his testimony kind of matches Jesus' testimony. As Jeff was obedient, and he gave his life to Christ, and he kept being obedient. So if that's your story, you continue on that motion. You continue on through that. Yeah. Verse 9. And once made perfect, there's that word again. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. Okay, so Jesus said, here's what it looks like to obey. Here's how I obeyed through suffering, the worst kind of suffering. Now it's your turn. Now it's your turn. We then follow him. We obey him. The source of eternal salvation for all who obey him, and was designated by God to be high priest in the order of Melchizedek. And that's where he starts kind of alluding to this. Then we get off into the reprimand that we talked about last week. And then he returns to this whole idea of Melchizedek and the argument that he had about how Jesus was greater than that. And then in verse 19 of chapter 6, he comes back to this. He says, we have this hope, and we read this verse last week. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner Jesus has entered on our behalf. He has become a high priest, what's that word? Forever. That's a big deal. He became a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Jesus was better than Melchizedek, which means he was better than Abraham, which means he was better than all of the Levitical priesthood that existed before him. And one of the big reasons why he was better was because he lasted forever. He's our high priest forever. All the things that we've learned about so far today, all the things that I'm hoping your heart and soul and spirit and mind have been encouraged by, that's never going to change. Jesus can empathize with your weakness always. He's always there to give us confidence to go before God's throne of grace. He's always there to show us an example of his victory, of what obedience looks like when you obey and you suffer and you come through on the other side of obedience and suffering victorious. Jesus is always going to meet our needs. And another part of that, he meets our needs as a better helper because Jesus meets our need for connecting with God by being our permanent high priest. So we're going to write that down on that subject. Jesus remains our high priest forever. And then we'll skip down to verse 11 of chapter 7 after the whole Melchizedek argument there. If perfection could have been attained through the Levitical priesthood, there's that word perfection. If perfection could have been attained through the Levitical priesthood, and indeed the law given to the people established that priesthood, why was there still need for another priest to come? And this is where he references the Psalm 110 about there's a priest to come in the order of Melchizedek, and you'll have to go and read that on your own. I didn't have room for that. And so he said, why was there still need for another priest to come, one in the order of Melchizedek, not in the order from Aaron? So some of you guys, some of the Bible scholars here, Jesus didn't come from the tribe of Levi, did I? Did he? I said Levi and I got stuck on the eye. Did he come from the tribe of Levi? No. What tribe did Jesus come from? Lion of Judah. Yes, there you go. He came from the tribe of Judah. He didn't even come from the tribe that was the Levitical priesthood. He came outside of that. And yet still, he was even better. In the old covenant, this Levitical priesthood, perfection could not be made. And I think a lot of the Old Testament is there to show us, you can't do this on your own. You cannot do this on your own. Attaining perfection cannot be done. That's why we need Jesus, who was made perfect so that he can become the eternal source of salvation for those who obey him, so that redemption could happen for us, so that we could be made pure, so that we could be made perfect someday. And redemption, that's been the goal the whole time. That's God's goal, is to redeem us, to bring us back, and a new priesthood then is formed. Verse 18 says, the former regulation is set aside because it was weak and useless, for the law made nothing perfect. And a better hope, everyone say better hope. It's just so monotone when you think about what you're saying. Say better hope. Yeah, it's exciting. So a better hope is introduced by which we draw near to God. That's what it's there for. Jesus has become the guarantor, I like that word, it's fun, guarantor of a better covenant. Say better covenant. Now, there have been many of those priests since death prevented them from continuing in office, but Because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who have come to God through him because he always lives to intercede for them. He can save completely because he has a permanent priesthood. He will always be there to intercede for us. Why? Because he lives today. He will always be there to mediate for us today. Why? Because he lives. He will always be there to help us when our hearts are weak. Because he lives. Because he lives. He'll always be there to show us, to inspire us, what it looks like to obey and suffer and then obey some more. Why? Because he died from suffering. And yet he lives. He lives. He has a permanent priesthood so he can better show us and help us and inspire us to all the things we've been talking about today. Verse 26 down in chapter 7. Such a high priest truly meets our need. One who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike the other high priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day. First for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once for all when he offered himself. Let's go and write that down, but that's next week's topic. I just want to give you a little taste of that. And it connects into this idea of Jesus being the great high priest. Jesus meets our need of a complete sacrifice and atonement, because that's one of the things that the high priest did. They went in and they gave this offering of atonement. They would give other offerings through the year to try and help keep up with the sins of the people. Jesus did a once for all, and he meets our need by a complete sacrifice of atonement. Now, just a couple thoughts as we're digesting this a little bit and going into our week. All of these things that we're talking about that are better. We have a better great high priest who helps us to better connect to God. We can have a better confidence to be able to communicate with God and to come to God's throne and feel confident that we can approach his throne of grace. We have a better example of what obedience looks like and the victories that come through that obedience. We have a better connectivity to God. We have better, a better sacrifice, a better high priest, because he's always there. He lives always. But listen, church, it's not better. It's not better if you don't put to use what you've been learning. Let's write that down. It's not better if you don't put into practice what you know. If you know that he is the great high priest and he can help you, but you don't turn to him for help, then it's not better for you. It might be better for you in your mind on a Sunday morning when you're processing this mentally. But then as you go into your week and you have struggles and you have a weak heart and you say, you know what, I'm just not able to hack it. If you don't lean on Jesus, it's not better. And you'll think, you know what, he's been preaching, it's better. It's not better for me. Well, it's not going to be better for you if you don't put it into practice. If you know that Jesus is a better way of connecting to God, that he allows a better connectivity to God. And we leave here and we keep trying to hack it on our own. And we only go to God when we say, Jesus, take the wheel. Then it's not better. Because it's not that connection that we're supposed to have with him. It's not a continuous connection, a constant connection. That's what's better. So if we don't put it into practice, it's not going to be better. If we know that Jesus is a complete sacrifice for our atonement, and we're not leaning on his grace, not leaning on his mercy. If we go in through the week without an attitude of thanksgiving, an attitude of gratitude towards Jesus' sacrifice, we're about to take communion here in a few minutes. And as we go into that time to have that attitude, thank you so very much. If that attitude's not present, then understanding Jesus' complete sacrifice and the atonement that he gives as our great high priest, our GHP, it's not better. It's not better unless you put it into practice. And the other thought, talking about the priesthood, in Peter's letter, he talks about how we are a priesthood. We are now the priesthood. It's not just the leaders. It's not just the paid staff or the elders. It's not just the ministry leaders in the church. If you're a Christian here today, guess what? You're a priest. You're part of the priesthood of believers. So as a priesthood, we should follow our great high priest, and that should be evident. Let's write this down. We are God's holy priesthood. So our lives should reflect the actions of our high priest. Jesus is a great high priest because he helps. He helps. If we are his followers, shouldn't we be helping also? Shouldn't we be reaching out to help each other, to help others? And following the footsteps of our great high priest, he helps me, I should help others. If we know that Jesus is a better connectivity to God, shouldn't we be doing all we can to help people connect to God as part of the priesthood? Following in the actions of our high priest, Jesus, who is the ultimate connection to God, and lead them to Jesus, who can connect them to God much better than we ever could. But we're part of that priesthood. We're part of this. This is part of our job. We have a ministry of reconciliation that we've been given to bring people to this knowledge and understanding of who God is through Jesus. We are to make spiritual differences in other people's lives. We are the new priesthood. And if we know that Jesus is the great sacrifice, the great atonement, and we accept that for ourselves, but we're not doing anything about sharing that with others, I know the sacrifice. I know someone who can make your life whole. We need to reflect our great high priest as part of the priesthood of believers. GHP, the great high priest.